This is a Talk of Iowa special, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 4, the most recent sampler of our historic sound project. In the coming hour, we'll be listening to original recordings, voices, and memories that go back 100 years. We'll hear what life was like for an Iowa soldier in Vietnam from the cassette tapes he sent home to his family. Then a rare recording of Buffalo Bill, who was a polished speaker despite being a rugged frontiersman. In his own words, the famous peanut scientist George Washington Carver talks about another skill he put to use at Iowa State University. We'll remember the Green Mountain train crash and celebrate the history of Camp Dodge and Veterans Auditorium. Finally, singer Andy Williams and nostalgic recordings from his life in entertainment. I'm Rick Fredrickson, and we welcome you to Talk of Iowa. This is a special edition of Talk of Iowa, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 4. I'm Rick Fredrickson. Iowa Archives is our continuing project in search of historic sound and voice recordings from Iowa's past. In production for 4 years, we've presented dozens of feature stories that include hundreds of original recordings. It's the most accessible one-stop collection of historic Iowa recordings that we know of. You can listen to the entire collection at iowapublicradio.org. For today's program, we'll sample some of the best, starting with tapes made by a soldier in Vietnam, audio letters that he sent back home to relatives in Iowa.
Good evening, everybody. Apologize for not writing. I'm just plain working long hours. By the time I get home at night, I don't feel like doing anything except taking a shower and going to sleep.
For Robert McKnight, home in Vietnam is his hooch, a small room in a wooden building with a tin roof. The Army lieutenant from Burlington was stationed in the Central Highlands, at strange-sounding places like Pleiku and Dak To. These confidential letters are held at the State Historical Society, and this is the first time they've been shared with the public.
And then yesterday, why come the commander informed me that I was being relieved. That means there will be nobody there that knows what's going on.
Lieutenant McKnight was like a grocery store manager, in charge of warehousing food, general merchandise, and fuel for the 4th Division and other units in the Pleiku area. There's an old saying that an army marches on its stomach.
I'm all the time having fights with my battalion headquarters and Quinyan, and everybody says, well, you didn't do this right and didn't do that right. Okay, I'll do it again, I'll do it over. People get all bent out of shape if Dr. O doesn't get any ice cream. Granted, ice cream is nice, it's a real good morale factor, but gee whiz.
This is the American Forces Vietnam Network.
During much of the 2.5 hours of tape, McKnight is listening to AFVN, a network of U.S. military radio stations that broadcast music, news, and public service announcements.
AFVN, Pleiku.
McKnight also received audio letters from his family in Burlington, then recorded over them with his latest dispatch from the war zone. The end of one reel was not erased, and we hear his late parents, Harold and Audella McKnight.
Now, this tape is just about over, and so we're going to have to say good night to you. Here's your mother.
Good night, Robert.
And it's about 2:50 now.
The time at the tone, 2200. B-52s take to the air again for 10 more strikes.
Well, we had a pretty exciting time here last Friday morning. About 2 o'clock, I was sleeping soundly and dreaming of Ellen and being home and all that good stuff. And all of a sudden, I jumped out of bed and I heard a whump, 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 whump.
It was soon after North Vietnam's Tet Offensive in 1968, and Charlie, the enemy, had launched a mortar attack and penetrated the barbed wire perimeter.
Now, I remember losing my flip-flops in the mud and just barefooting it over to the bunker and jumping in. So they got in the motor pool with their satchel charges. They must have made them up, and then they started setting them off and throwing them, and they damaged or destroyed about 20 different kinds of vehicles. I didn't really get too mad about the whole deal until I found out they hit my Jeep, and then I really got mad.
There were U.S. injuries, but no one was killed.
So Charlie could just as easy have thrown his satchel charges and grenades into the barracks instead of hitting a motor pool, but he figured we could replace people a lot easier than we can replace equipment. By golly, he's right.
Typical of Iowans today, McKnight grumbled frequently about the weather. In this case, the monsoon season.
It's raining again. The stock on my carbine is mildewed, but it gets cold. This rain feels like it's going to snow. You know, the day before a real big snowstorm, a wet snow, when there's a strong wind and the rain comes down, it's real fine, and you know it's going to snow. Well, that's how it's like here most of the time.
So as I sit here contemplating my room and thinking, boy, I'm never coming back to anything like this once I get away. So you can hang it up as far as me extending for a year, because I don't want to take a chance on ever having to do this again. Once is enough.
McKnight was single and 23 when he made these recordings. He'd met a California girl at a USO dance, and the long-distance relationship was tested by mail delivery and doubt.
My dear, sweet, lovable young thing on the West Coast hasn't been too faithful in her letter writing, so I didn't send her any kind of a present or anything for birthday. I just sent her a birthday card. As far as I'm concerned at this time, that's quite adequate. If she keeps going like she has been, she's only going to get a card for Christmas, too.
Some servicemen cured loneliness with Vietnamese companionship. The most famous entertainment district was Tudo Street in Saigon. Lieutenant McKnight found his way there 42 years ago.
We went down and took a walk on one of the infamous streets down there and visited with some of the girls. Most of them, if you don't buy them a Saigon tea, which is just nothing but a shot glass with a tea or cold water or something, and for anywhere from 200 to 400 piastres, which is $2 to $4, if you don't buy them one, they won't sit and talk to you. So we didn't have too many girls sit and talk with us.
McKnight finally found true love in Iowa. He survived Vietnam, returned to Burlington, went to the University of Iowa, and got married. After hearing the tapes for the first time in more than four decades, what surprises him today?
There was a lot of stuff on there that I did not remember. I guess there was a lot more artillery and mortars and so on, because my dad must have said, "You're scaring your mother to death. Please, you know, don't put that stuff in there."
Bob is 67 now, retired from the insurance business, and lives in Aurora, Illinois.
When I got to Dock To, then I was the one that certified soldiers that were killed in action.
This is one thing Bob did not talk about in these recordings. Since he controlled refrigeration units, he had to store American soldiers killed in action until they were returned home.
You know, thinking back on it, I would probably have a much tougher time doing that now than I did then, because then I was fully engrossed in the, you know, the military life and in the combat zone.
Even as the war dragged on in 1968, McKnight saw potential in Vietnam's future.
There's a real nice beach. It goes from Da Nang all the way up, miles and miles and miles. I bet it would rival the Riviera if there wasn't a war going on. That's too bad.
Today, China Beach is an international vacation spot. Vietnam is a growing Asian economy, and Bob McKnight says he'd love to go back as a tourist.
How about that? Well, I got to go now, so good night, and I'll finish this tomorrow.
And we thank John Pimble for providing technical backup in getting these old Vietnam War-era recordings digitized. Modern soldiers serving overseas can send emails or call home. In World War II, there was something called V-mail, letters often heavily censored. And long before even the Postal Service, the written word was carried by horseback. For the sesquicentennial of the Pony Express, Iowa Archives profiled an Iowan who was one of these earliest mail carriers and would later become an icon of the Old West. For generations, the Pony Express has been glamorized in westerns.
You going to finish your run to Sacramento, Cartwright?
You bet I am.
From Bonanza to Wild Bill Hickok.
Hey! Wild Bill, wait for me!
And even a young John Wayne who saddled up in this 1936 film as the telegraph was making the Pony Express obsolete.
Right on time, Blair, as usual.
Wouldn't want to be late on the last run, Mr. Dodge. Sorry to see it end.
So am I.
At the age of 14, the most famous Pony Express rider was another Iowan, William Cody, born near LeClaire in eastern Iowa. He held the 24-hour distance record, changing horses along the way, covering 320 miles.
You had to be a teenage boy. You had to be the size of a jockey to be able to ride this many miles.
A Des Moines couple, William and Linda Coleman, are scholars on the life of Bill Cody, nicknamed Buffalo Bill since he provided bison to feed railroad workers. At the core of Cody's legend is his traveling Wild West show that recreated the pioneer days, the Pony Express, Indian battles, and train robberies. Stars included Sitting Bull, wounded knee survivors, and sharpshooter Annie Oakley. The exhibition came to Des Moines in 1883.
First, there'd be a sweeping grand entrance to the whole company. and then he would appear in front of them and make this pronouncement, and then the exhibition would begin.
Buffalo Bill didn't like it to be called a show. He called it an exhibition and a Congress of Rough Riders of the World.
Ladies and gentlemen, a Congress of the Rough Riders of the World.
Since he lived so long ago, recordings of Buffalo Bill's voice are rare. The best sound clip was made at the Edison Studio in 1914, a couple years before Cody's death.
It is a great pleasure and privilege to know one of the greatest men that has ever lived.
Cody is praising inventor Thomas Edison.
One who has contributed so much to the knowledge and happiness of the human race.
It's a very cultured voice for a man who was a rugged frontiersman, who was a scout in the Indian Wars, who drove stagecoaches, rode the Pony Express. It's not the voice you would expect from a man that had lived that hard a life before he became an actor.
Well, I look at it and I say, oh, my heavens, I wish that it was, you know, in our digital sound quality of today. To me, it's just a miracle that we actually are hearing somebody that was born the year Iowa became a state.
The music of the Wild West show intensified the spectacle. For a time, Iowa composer Carl King was Buffalo Bill's music director. Dwayne Olson is with the Carl King Band in Fort Dodge.
It's background music, much as you would write for movies or anything else.
The show ended with the melancholy tune, Passing of the Red Man.
The title says it all. It just signifies the end of the West as Buffalo Bill and America had known it. It was the end of an era.
Over his lifetime, it's estimated Buffalo Bill appeared before 60 million people. Despite his success, he died broke. His Iowa birthplace was relocated to the town Buffalo Bill founded in Cody, Wyoming. I'm Rick Fredrickson, Iowa Public Radio News. This is the Best of Iowa Archives Part 4, a special edition of Talk of Iowa. Coming up next on the program, you'll hear from one of Iowa's first on-the-air celebrities as he tells a wonderful story from the early days of radio. Also, we'll play some old commercials and share the history and sound of Veterans Memorial Auditorium.
This is the American Forces Vietnam Network. Did you know that most people suffer snake bite because they're trying to catch or molest a snake? It's a fact, but think now. If a snake were trying to put you in a bag, wouldn't you bite it? Human bites are not necessarily fatal to snakes, but unfortunately, snake bite is often fatal to humans. Stay healthy. Don't molest snakes.
B-52s take to the air again for 10 more strikes. Maddox to announce his candidacy within the hour, and Southern Leadership Conference urges members not to vote GOP. Those are the headlines to the top stories. Now from Major American Networks, Wire Services, and Military Sources, the complete details compiled in the AFEN newsroom in Saigon.
Welcome back to the Talk of Iowa. I'm Rick Fredrickson, and today we feature the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 4. We're going back to days gone by, recapturing the voices and sounds of Iowa's culture and history. Listen now as we hear a simple story from the dawn of radio. The year is 1972, and two of public radio's early voices are observing the 50th anniversary of WOI in Ames.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Music Shop.
Doug Brown chatted with Andy Wolfreis, who was there when the station signed on in 1922 and was one of Iowa's first broadcasting personalities.
I sold radios on the side. The WOI was not on the air all the time. So we had a technique of putting out a Grebe receiver, a regenerative receiver, and this is what I was pushing then, with a newfangled Magnavox loudspeaker. So I took one out to a farm home, I'm going to say in the vicinity of Waterloo. I'd hate to identify anyone if they're still around. And set it up. Our technique was to take the set out in the afternoon, show them how to run it, and then that evening they probably could hear some of the Chicago stations. There were two then, and KDKA and some of those. And then rush out the next day and close the sale $425. Quite a lot of money in those days. Still is. And we'd close the deal and confidently wait for the next day when they came in to report their battery had died and they were going to require another $20 for a battery charger. So anyway, I had this thing out, and I went out the next day to close the sale, and lo, here was the farmer, his wife, and the sheriff of Black Hawk County. And he escorted me into Waterloo, and eventually I got out from under. But the farmer was absolutely certain that I was conning him, because he had no telephone, usual thing in those days in the farms. He had no telephone. There was no possible wire connection between his farm home and Chicago, and yet I claimed that he was hearing a Chicago station. So obviously there was skullduggery. So
Andy Wolfries, born in Ireland and died in Iowa at the age of 83. The invention of radio is not yet 100 years old, so it didn't exist when Iowa's largest military installation opened. This is how we told the centennial story of Camp Dodge in 2009, using some of the military museum's own historic audio recordings along the way.
Down the hall, you'll find the 34th Infantry Division Room, Prisoner of War Room, Weapons Room, which has 130 weapons in.
The Gold Star Museum tells the proud story of Camp Dodge, 100 years' worth of war and peace and serving Iowans in floods, tornadoes, and other emergencies. Some of the most cherished accounts are oral histories, the voices of the people who lived and worked here.
I had the account for the horses we'd received and lost.
World War I veteran Wilbur Boyne from Des Moines was a charter member of the American Legion. He was interviewed at the age of 103.
According to my record, we lost more horses than we received. And the captain says, well, that's good. He says, if it had been the other way around, we'd have been in trouble. So.
Early automobiles also traveled the camp's dusty roads. Dorothy Ponell used one to cover Camp Dodge as a newspaper reporter for the Des Moines Capital.
We had a Model T Ford we called Lizzie. I never had such a good time in my life.
She sat for this interview in Iowa City in 1977 and remembered the thousands of young Iowans who were drafted in World War I and trained at Camp Dodge.
They were delighted that they had been chosen.
There wasn't really the bitterness about being taken from your job or your home.
Oh, no, no. They all seemed to enter into it with so much enthusiasm.
Dorothy was at Camp Dodge during the deadly flu pandemic and covered the VIP visits of Teddy Roosevelt, Eddie Rickenbacker, and General Leonard Wood. Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri was named in honor of the general. This undated recording has the sounds of boot camp there, where many Iowa soldiers have trained. Another soldier named Wood was also destined for fame, but future artist Grant Wood was just another face when he was at Camp Dodge in 1918. That's when Art Rasmussen from Weston arrived. He was joined by recruits from southern Iowa and Missouri.
They were mostly farmers, and I know some of them weren't able to read or write. I remember writing to one fellow's wife for him and reading her letters to him.
Rasmussen was there for the only military execution in Iowa history. Three black soldiers were court-martialed for raping a teenage white girl.
They got out of order and marched everybody down to the scene of execution. There was a lot of people down there, I know that. They were down on a hillside. Mm-hmm.
The gallows were off-limits for civilians, but another hillside not far away would later become the most popular civilian retreat in Camp Dodge history, the swimming pool where Ronald Reagan used to go. I'm standing over the deep end now in what was one of the largest outdoor pools in the country. The pool was closed in 2005 and has been filled in with dirt, but the bathhouse is being renovated. Music is part of Iowa's military history. This 1967 recording is the 34th Army Band from a live performance at the old Val Air Ballroom in Des Moines. We're going to take a commercial break now, but not the kind you think. Iowa's history and audio includes these old advertising messages.
There are many good reasons for serving yourself at a Pister Derby station.
In the mid-1970s, full-service gas stations were on their way out.
Anybody can do it.
And Pister urged Iowans to welcome cheaper prices.
Or maybe you just don't want anyone else laying hands on your hot little car. Pister, it's a gas.
Listen for the TikTok specials offered every day at your TikTok store located in Waterloo, Benton, and Grundy Center.
Food markets have always been major clients for commercial broadcasters. This promotion ran in the late 1940s. Grocery store spots tended to have musical jingles so their customers would take notice.
It's fresh, it's inky dinky.
Shop at the Sunmart, the prices are low. Foods on all the counters are the friends you know. Shopping is easy, the parking galore. Save on all your groceries at the Sunmart store.
Stock up on Golden Valley pork and beans in the tall tin, each just 5 cents.
To all that has prices, we say, me too, me too, me too.
Where there's a helpful smile in every aisle.
Hi, this is Arthur Godfrey. Just want to tell you that I'm very happy to announce that Jolly Time Popcorn is going to be one of my sponsors on the morning radio show.
This unusual recording is not a commercial. In 1956, CBS radio giant Arthur Godfrey was speaking directly to the salesman of the Sioux City-based American Popcorn Company.
We got to work as a team. You get it out there, get the grocer to put it where they'll see it when they come in, and I'll get them to ask for Jolly Time, all right. You know, it has to be where when they come, they say, oh, yeah, that's Jolly Time. That's what Godfrey told us about. That way it'll work.
We take you now to the Iowa State Fair, a great fair celebrating the centennial of a great state.
Product placement is a long-established marketing technique. Listen to this WOW broadcast from the Iowa State Fair in the 1940s. 13-month-old Stephen Carell was just crowned the champion baby boy.
And with him are his parents, Mr. and Mrs. L. Stanford Carell of Des Moines. Little Stephen Henry is fond of his breakfast food, and it's good for him, too. Rich in vitamins and health-giving nourishment. It tastes good, too. Yes, sir. OK Whole Wheat Cereal, the champion breakfast food for the champion baby boy of Iowa.
Listen, you automobiles, let Butterworth put tires on your wheels. The Butterworth boys will save you lots of dough. See Butterworth, you automobiles, for quality tires for your wheels. Instant credit and the payments are low.
Some production studios built ads around a catchy tune. This tire commercial ran for decades in central Iowa.
Go to Butterworth, you automobiles.
And now back to normal programming. Iowa Public Radio's Historic Sound Project decided to do something different. We put a building under the Iowa Archives stethoscope. Veterans Memorial Auditorium is under renovation, and the old sports arena is gone forever. A perfect time to remember what drew so many people to the capital city from all over Iowa.
Our 1993 State High School Wrestling Tournament place winners, and escorted by the Brands brothers.
Hawkeye wrestling coach Tom Brands was 25 and hadn't won his gold medal yet when he and his brother were celebrities at the State Boys Wrestling Tournament. Since this dignified old arena opened in 1955, tens of millions of visitors have gone through the turnstiles.
The first event was, I'm sure it was the policeman's ball, and I was here.
88-year-old Lennon Davis was the first usher. He got $1 for working Drake basketball games.
You know, when this was first built and you came here, you had to be a veteran to work here. It's a part of me, you know, it's gone.
Lorenzen works against Rickenbacker.
The girls' basketball tournament was the longest continuing event, going back to the six-on-six game. some of the state's best athletes excelled here.
Yep, here come the Rebels. Brinkmeyer takes it to the hoop and scores.
Lisa Brinkmeyer starred in the final six-on-six championship when Hubbard Ratcliffe beat Atlantic.
For Laundry, they've had the burden of being rated number one all season long. Are they unbeaten or unbeatable?
Play-by-play announcer Frosty Mitchell described state tournament action for 40 years. But 1959 was different. A blizzard had trapped thousands of players and fans inside vets. And Frosty played rock and roll records to keep the kids occupied. Parents wanted the music turned down so they could sleep, but the kids wanted to dance.
And probably the thing that I remember most was kids getting angry with me because they couldn't do the bunny hop. Wasn't my fault, but the Veterans Auditorium basketball was a portable floor, and the building engineers didn't want the kids all jumping up and down at the same time trying to do the bunny hop.
Memories flowed when the public was invited back to Vets for one last look. Mike Dick used to coach the Pocahontas girls.
Every Thursday, we got our kids out of school and brought them down on a school bus, spent the entire day and evening here watching, you know, that caliber of play, hoping that someday our kids would reach that pinnacle of getting to play and me getting to coach here.
Everyone screams, and I love screaming.
Before contractors started ripping out old seats, we found Lisa Campbell Patterson holding a picture of her father and sitting in the row that her family has reserved since Vets opened.
Anybody that knew anything about girls basketball knew if they needed tickets, go see Jack Campbell. He'd probably find them tickets.
How long are you going to sit here?
I don't know yet. I may have to have a really good cry before I get done.
Okay, this is the room that used to be a bar during halftime of the Drake games. They had a couple of kegs of beer up here, and this is where I came to come in and drink beer underage.
Of course, I go back to the Maury John era, where it was the toughest ticket in town.
Longtime sports personality Mike Newell.
Bill Henderson up in the crow's nest playing the organ, and he's the one who started the "Here We Go, Bulldogs, Here We Go."
Hey, Osage, there you are. There are your cheerleaders. There's the pin for Breckenridge from Sinclair.
This legendary public radio host retired at Vets from his other love, wrestling play-by-play.
How about a big hand for the retiring Doug Brown? This is his last work as a commentator on Iowa Public Television.
Vets Auditorium was the largest venue in Iowa, number 5 in the nation. Over time, it became outdated, and modern facilities emerged across Iowa. The new adjacent Wells Fargo Arena inherited concerts and sporting events from Vets, and Drake now has its own Knapp Center. But in its heyday, some of the biggest events at Vets were entertainment shows. Bob Hope, Johnny Cash, and Janis Joplin. In 1982, Ozzy Osbourne shocked the audience when he bit the head off a bat. In 1956, you could see the King of Rock and Roll for $2.50. Merton Barr managed the auditorium for decades.
That's my very favorite event. I'm an Elvis fan. I learned all the stories that happened about Elvis that first time he was here. He was not very popular at the time. There was only about a half a house here for that concert. They booed him, they jeered him, they threw stuff at him on the stage, and he was very, I don't understand why he ever came back here.
You're the devil in disguise.
Elvis did return, and fans lined up for the 1977 finale, one of his last performances before he died. Countless famous Americans have stepped into this old house of bricks: Dwight Eisenhower, Bobby Kennedy, Rocky Marciano. The Archives of Iowa Broadcasting provided this sound clip.
Don't you go anywhere.
There'll be a big celebration afterwards.
Don't you go anywhere.
57 seconds.
This is where former Northern Iowa quarterback Kurt Warner played with the Barnstormers on his way to the NFL and Super Bowl. Jim Zobel called this touchdown in 1997.
Here is Kurt Warner, back, throws, touchdown.
Bettendorf has been a strong contender throughout the years.
Among the more unique events was the dance and drill competitions, telecast by Iowa Public TV.
Listen very closely for their footwork and timing.
Recollections of this monument tend to be personal. Baby boomers might recall the Shriners Circus, ice follies, and rodeos. For 2 months in 1962, Vets hosted the National Bowling Championships. Des Moines residents came here for fresh water in the flood of 1993. Two skateboarders may have been the final competition at the Old Vets, jumping the steps just outside the ticket counter. When the construction fence comes down in 12, the exterior will look the same, but the open arena will be replaced with a new mezzanine floor and a ballroom, the birthplace of new memories for generations to come. In Des Moines, I'm Rick Fredrickson, Iowa Public Radio News. It Was a Very Good Year is performed by the 34th Army Band out of Fairfield. When Talk of Iowa continues, more of the Best of Iowa archives, we'll remember Iowa's worst train crash and contrast two unforgettable human voices, the famous agricultural scientist George Washington Carver and Iowa's legendary crooner Andy Williams. Please stay with us. Welcome back to this edition of Talk of Iowa. I'm Rick Fredrickson with the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 4. Some of our best ideas have come from listeners like you. If you have an audio treasure to tell us about, there's an email link on the Iowa Archives page at iowapublicradio.org. That's also where you can listen to the entire Iowa Archives collection. A terrifying moment in history and an old telegraph recording resulted in this radio memorial of Iowa's worst train crash. This is an exact replica of a steam locomotive that was in service across Iowa early in the last century. Byrne Ketchum from Rowan builds trains at 1/8 scale. The engine burns coal just like the originals. He's about to install seats in a wooden passenger car.
Those wood cars were known, if they were in a crash, to telescope, which would do really bad things to anybody in the seats.
Byrne comes from a railroading family, and a prized possession is this late 1930s recording of his father telegraphing train orders from Clear Lake Junction on the Chicago Great Western. In 1910, the telegraph spread news of a terrible accident on the same railroad near Green Mountain, involving a train similar to Byrne Ketchum's model. A dozen cars were being pulled from Marshalltown to Waterloo when the engine derailed. Some passengers were riding in old wooden coaches and others in steel Pullman cars.
This photograph here shows a heavy Pullman car and how it telescoped through one of these wooden coaches. At one time, it was reported that were 3,000 to 5,000 spectators just watching what had happened at the accident.
David Shear is an historian in nearby Marshalltown, where the passengers were brought.
Immediately, a relief train was dispatched, but also doctors went in automobiles to the site. Horses were literally run to death transporting the injured. There were not enough stretchers and beds to go around, and so the local lumberyard supplied screen doors to use as litters.
Passengers came from all over. At least 52 were killed, including a group from Cedar Rapids and a family from Rhinebeck. More than 50 other passengers were injured.
It was reported in one newspaper that there was a man pleading that somebody just take his life. And his head was through a window, and they opened up the glass, or broke out the glass around, you know, tried to make it more comfortable, and part of his jaw fell off. It's just a horrific thing, and we see that today. Our first responders see it, our ambulance people see those type things, but it's not reported as it is today.
The site of the train crash is today along Abbott Avenue. A sign says historical marker right here on the Marshall-Tama County line.
There were trains coming into town where people were looking for their dead, looking for their injured. And so the city was overwhelmed with people coming in, and people opened up their homes.
Investigators never did determine a cause for the accident. The tracks are long gone and the tragedy largely forgotten. A former school psychologist in Green Mountain has been researching the crash for years. Robert Kerr is now an author, and his first novel goes back in time to the disaster of 1910.
I was just particularly taken in by the fate of this Dr. Elijah Jay, who was actually not on the train, but became one of the casualties of the train wreck through his own heroism. And it just really struck a chord with me, because it made it sound as though Marshalltown had really risen to the cause in a way like no other town in Iowa ever had.
The Green Mountain train crash occurred on March 21, 1909. An author researching the life of George Washington Carver has compiled a rare collection of the scientist's recordings. For a man who was educated in Iowa and contributed so much to mankind, Carver's unusual voice was just as prominent as his vocation.
Swing low, sweet chariot.
As a black man born into slavery, George Washington Carver was a big fan of Paul Robeson's music. His deep voice was the polar opposite of Carver's high soprano when he used to sing in Indianola. It was 120 years ago that Carver enrolled at Simpson College and later Iowa State on his way to becoming famous for turning peanuts into hundreds of new products.
The finest use we've been able to make of peanuts is in the treatment of the after effects of infantile paralysis.
He had a squeaky little high voice when he was young, but he used to relate it to the whooping cough. So I used to think that probably that was the reason for his high voice.
Peter Burchard has been studying Carver's life for 23 years and says he believes there was another mysterious contributing factor.
Other people said, he was a castrato, that he was castrated. One of them told me that he had spoken with the doctors who examined Carver's body after he died, and that apparently where there should have been testicles, there was nothing but scar tissue. So it's a little hard to figure when that would have happened. But it seems probably to have been the case.
Burchard is writing a Carver biography and has researched many thousands of letters, microfilm, and other archives. Along the way, he's accumulated a one-of-a-kind collection of Carver recordings.
When I was in college at Ames, Iowa, I had charge of a football squad and a running squad. I was the professional rubber in those days.
This is probably the best-preserved sample that exists of Carver's voice from a radio interview more than 70 years ago.
We call them rubbers. We call them masseurs now because it's more dignified and sounds better. But we call them rubbers.
He was something of a healer. One person said that when you shook hands with him, you could feel this kind of electrical energy.
Ready for greatness after graduating from Iowa State, Booker T. Washington brought Carver to the Tuskegee Institute, where he taught and invented new products in his laboratory.
Dr. Carver, do you consider yourself a chemist?
I should say, with reference to that, that we have to be very careful lest the ego comes in. A person that can bake a reasonably good cake or a reasonably good pan of biscuit can't go out and put up a shingle and say that they are good cooks.
And he's got a great deal of sense of humor in that recording, and he applied the same to himself as a chemist. Anybody else can call it what they like.
A laboratory is simply a place where we tear things to pieces. Sometimes we can get them together again if we want to put them together, and sometimes we can't. But nevertheless, we can pull things to pieces and get the truth that we are searching for.
Carver knew he was a trailblazer. From organic gardening to soy milk and alfalfa sprouts, he was ahead of his time. That voice is unforgettable, and author Burchard says the public has yet to discover how great George Washington Carver was.
Courage, must come from the soul within. The man must furnish the will to win. So figure it out for yourself, my lad. You are born with all that the great hath had. With your equipment, they all began. Get hold of yourself and say, I can.
Another distinctive voice has been soothing Americans for over 75 years. The venerated Iowa crooner Andy Williams continues to be one of the most productive octogenarians in entertainment. It was prior to his 83rd birthday that we visited his Iowa birthplace in Wall Lake and his theater in Branson, Missouri, for this Iowa Archives profile. Few performers can match the singing career of Andy Williams. The smooth tenor has more than 20 gold and platinum record albums.
Guess there's no use in hanging around.
Andy was the youngest of four singing brothers, and with Bob, Don, and Dick were the choir boys at Wall Lakes Presbyterian Church. Andy says it was his father's tough love that made the Williams Brothers Quartet.
He said we had to work harder than other people because we weren't quite as good as the rest of them, which is a terrible thing for a father to say to his children, you know, in retrospect, but at the time he thought that was a way of getting us to practice and to work harder.
We talked with Andy at his theater in Branson, his memories fresh from writing his life story.
Only recently, you know, in the last, say, 19 years since I've been here in Branson, have I got over the feeling that maybe I really do belong here. You know, maybe I am all right.
Well, this is a house where Andy was born in.
Andy Williams' believers never had any doubts, and they continued to visit Wall Lake. This group made a late summer visit from Dubuque. Tour guide Joan Gibson knows the singer from her days in England.
Well, yeah, we certainly used to see Andy Williams on television. He's very popular, I think, and still very popular, I would say, with seniors, anyway, that know and love his music. It's kind of ageless, isn't it?
1934 was the last year that Andy lived in this house. It's been completely restored, looks just like it did then. The surrounding countryside is the same.
Say, Joe, yeah. Who are those four good-looking young fellows over there?
The Williams brothers cut their teeth on radio. When their father moved the family to Des Moines, the boys went to school, earned money singing at funerals, and got their first big break on WHO's Iowa Barn Dance Frolic. Then it was off to Chicago.
Bob, 20, Dick, 14, Don, 17, and Andy boasting the ripe old age of 12.
This 1940 recording is from the National Barn Dance on WLS. Next stop for the Williams brothers was Cincinnati, where their collective paycheck hit $400 a week. Then, in the thick of World War II, the head of the household decided his singing sons were ready for L.A.
Mail call from the United States of America.
They starred in Mail Call, a program for servicemen overseas, and in 1944 harmonized in this patriotic tune.
We've got the ships, we've got the guns, we've got the courage too. We're fighting sons of the Navy Blue.
All four brothers served in uniform, just 6 months in the Merchant Marines for Andy. When they reunited, entertainer Kay Thompson recruited the brothers for a touring nightclub act that Andy remembers well.
We'd come out and say, hello, 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 and howdy-do, how have you been, and hoop-de-doo, and a big, fat, western howdy.
Hello, 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 and howdy-do.
And then we introduced Kay Thompson. Kay Thompson, Kitty Kay Thompson.
Kay Thompson, Kay Thompson.
And then we introduced ourselves. This is Andy, this is Bob, this is Don, this is Dick.
Dick William, Don William, Bob William, and Andy William. Hello.
They became celebrities, played Vegas, and were in movies. It was in 1953 when the brothers broke up and Andy launched his own act.
Hi! Hi!
Bong, 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 it's time to shine.
This was the last time the Williams brothers performed in Iowa. Public TV was there 12 years ago as Andy, Don, and Dick sang for Wall Lake when they returned to their childhood home. Without his brothers, Andy's solo career stalled. He appeared at small clubs, sometimes didn't get paid, and saved money by traveling with a hot plate. That changed in 1955.
In case you're just joining us, this is Tonight.
Steve Allen invited Andy to the original Tonight Show, and he stayed for 2 years. So... his recording career took off after Canadian Sunset cracked the top 10. Claudine Longe became his first wife, and he hosted a highly rated network variety show throughout the 60s. The biggest stars of the day wanted to be with Andy, singing here with Peter, Paul, and Mary. Now that we're old and ready to go, we got to think of what happened a long time ago. He also introduced new talent, including the Osmonds and a young Elton John. He even sang with Kermit the Frog.
Two of a kind, for your information, we're two of a kind.
This is where the Andy Williams brand is centered today, Moon River Theater in Branson, a state-of-the-art facility surrounded by waterfalls and a sound system playing Andy Williams' favorites. Because of the economy, the theater is sometimes half full, but still, that's 1,000 tickets sold for up to $40 each.
Mr. Williams?
Come on in.
Thank you.
When he's in Branson, Andy performs most nights, walks every morning, and runs several companies. We talked about his new memoirs and his friendship with Bobby Kennedy. Andy was with their friends upstairs when the presidential candidate was assassinated.
John Glenn and I went to the hotel where we're staying, which is the Beverly Hills Hotel, to pick up another suit and a shirt because the others were all bloodstained. And so we had that, but we forgot to get him a dark tie, a black tie. I had one on, so we used that. And that's the one I guess he was buried with.
He has fond recollections of Iowa.
You know, everybody in town knew each other, and everybody was open their doors at Christmas time and practically strung lights from one house to another. But I became sort of known as a farm boy in a tuxedo.
Do you always get standing ovations like you did last night?
Well, a lot of the time, yeah.
You're very modest.
What can I say? Yes, I do get standing ovations, at least one, sometimes three.
What's your favorite song in your career?
I guess I'd have to say Moon River, because I can still sing it after all these years and not get sick of it.
Moon River.
And I'm lucky I didn't record, you know, Itsy Bitsy Polka Dot Bikini, because I would hate having to do that all the time. I have that my theme song, but Moon River is such a great song that Henry Mancini wrote for me. It isn't the same arrangement I have on the record. It's a beautiful arrangement, and I love doing it every night. So I have to say Moon River is my favorite one, because I can still do it and love it.
I'm going your way to drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see.
And he still performs on the road from time to time. Andy Williams turned 83 on December 3rd, 2010. He has no plans to retire. We invite your ideas for the Iowa Archives Project. If you have a tip that might lead us to more rare or extraordinary recordings, send us an email. You can listen to the entire historic sound series at iowapublicradio.org.
Andy Williams.
I'm Rick Fredrickson, and this has been a special Talk of Iowa, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 4.
What's the matter?
My brother doesn't think you introduced us.
Well, I introduced you earlier in the show. Besides that, everybody here knows you.
Not everybody knows us. So I've got a lot of... I got five letters to my house just addressed to occupant. Big deal. I get letters addressed to occupant, too. I get lots of them.
See, nobody knows you also. Nobody knows either one of us if you introduce us. Wait, all right. I'll give you an introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, the Occupant Brothers.
That's much better.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Talk of Iowa is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime by going to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio.